What's that sound? Oh my God!
Every spring is a spring.
In the house.
House music is a style of electronic dance music that evolved out of tunes written for, and later by, houses. During the fiscally restrained 1970s, audiences were no longer willing to shell out upwards of $6 to sit through an hour and a half of musical entertainment, preferring to keep their leisure time dollars stapled to the insides of their pants pockets. Many composers withered and died. However, the more savvy of them followed the money, taking their spectacles.
Follow the money. He used to tell me that at the old Hermitage Deli. Follow the money.
And
then get the money.
Did it do you any good?
Absolutely not. No. My pants pockets were stapled without money in them.
There it is. Taking their spectacles to the spectators. The non-pop contingent in particular renounced the traditional concert hall venue and moved into homes, offices, and abattoirs. Some tunesmiths embraced these new milieus by incorporating the building's component parts into their compositions. Zito Zankel, for example, scored his Abattoir Study No. 78 for piano, double bass, viscera tongs, and anechoic draining chamber. Max Roachclip wrote an entire operetta utilizing only indigenous office equipment, two typewriters, I don't suppose you have one nearby.
Actually, you want to continue with that orchestration, Bennett?
And yes. Are we...
We're about to.
Okay. Two typewriters, a stapler, a mimeograph machine, an electric pencil sharpener, a treadle-powered water cooler, and 27 sopranos.
And it seems that what we have at hand is a surviving example of Roachclip's operetta.
Is that so?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, I was going through the Calvos and Damien archives, which have everything.
Everything.
And I found a rather tender scene from the...
Tenderized scene
from the Max Roachclip opera.
Operetta.
Operetta, yes. Mm-hmm. And this is a quiet section, in fact, for all of the instruments playing kind of delicately, and only 9 of those 27 sopranos.
Will we be hearing this?
Yes, we'll be hearing it right now.
Oh.
Here it is. This is... And unfortunately, the
Recording quality is poor?
Well, the recording quality is adequate, but the problem is the title of the piece is missing. So we still don't know what this Roachclip operetta was called, but this one scene survives. Ready for it?
I am.
Here it comes.
Thank you.
tender scene from...
The Office Equipment Operetta, whatever the name is. It's astounding.
No idea, Max Roach clip, and we found it in our collection.
Where else but in the house?
The house.
Collection. Gracious. And while music that features domicile materials can be traced all the way back to Charles Ives' The Housatonic at Stockbridge, circa 1921, it positively thrived in the 1970s. Concerto for baseboards. I don't suppose you have any...
No baseboard concerto.
It's cellar door jam session.
I think we have something like that, though.
Okay.
That I think we have here. I believe this was also in the collection. Yes, yes, it's right here. Yes, so you see.
So others include the Chair Rail Rag, Song of the Wainscoting, Trio for Frames, Sashes, and Rafters, and what about the Window Mass?
I think we have just the introduction from the Window Mass here. Let me see if I can find that. Yes, see?
Yes, indeed. The Window Mass, that opening chord sequence is... You always recognize that. And the Anechoic Draining Chamber Symphony are just a few of the many inventive compositions from that era that relied on house parts. But equally important was the performer. A successful concert hinged on more than just a working hinge. Perfect pitch often had to take a back seat to woodworking skills. A musician who couldn't properly tune a joist had to cede performance rights to a member of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. House music continued to evolve in the 1980s as composers experimented with house breaking music, which typically involved several sheets of manuscript paper, a spray can of pee be gone, and a chihuahua. I think we're still hearing the hinge. Oh, wait. A less successful offshoot was housewares music, because the presence of casseroles, sauté pans, steam irons, vacuum cleaners, and front-loading washers more often than not prompted the composer to transfer to the much more lucrative domestic service industry. This relates, I think, to the next section.
Well, we're preparing ourselves.
Preparation aging. In 1995, Chinese-American architect I.M. Pei revolutionized the housing industry by inventing sentient lodging. Pei's initial goal was to help his absent-minded brother-in-law, who frequently locked himself out of his house. Pei's La Maison Interactive allowed a forgetful homeowner to converse with his or her domicile, which, after a gentle scolding, would unlock the door. Usually. But as so often happens with initially modest innovations, other minds soon devised radical applications for it. One of them, i.e. the other mind, not the chihuahua...
Yes, yes, I understand.
...belonged to composer John Cagefree Eggs. For years, Dr. Eggs had been an advocate of music for avocados.
Yes.
Sorry, inanimate objects.
Yeah, that's inanimate.
That is.
You just skipped a line. I was ready to go for it.
He tirelessly championed music for tricycle wheels, rocks. You didn't happen to have that bang the rocks together, do you?
I don't. No.
Okay. Bowls of frozen avocados.
There they are.
Leopard spots, tweezers, and anechoic draining chambers. It was, therefore, only a small leap for him to devise an artificially intelligent music module that processed electroacoustic data through the house's interactive sprinkler system. By pasting a variety of music samples into the module, Dr. Eggs taught it to compose. Is that what we get for house composing?
That may be all. I'm looking here for... How about this? Let's try this.
Excellent.
Got a chainsaw handy?
Mm-hmm. At first, that was a relative term, for the music sounded more like a furnace catching fire, or an attic fan overheating, or a stairway collapsing from termite blight than it did, say, the Poltergeist Polka. But the module learned. And gradually, its electroacoustic events became musically interesting. House concerts followed. The attendees were almost always other houses, and how they learned to move about without damaging their foundations is still a mystery.
90K a year! I'm still flipping burgers for $5 and change.
House music of 2008 has evolved into yet another format. Gone are the chihuahuas, the housewares, the jam sessions, even the anechoic draining chambers. Instead, we have music that is... Oh, but I needn't confuse you with a lot of compositional mumbo-jumbo, not when we have a quintessential house music composer on today's program who can confuse you all by himself. That's right. For the next 2 hours, house music. In
the house
of Calvos and Damien.
Starting to make a mess down there.
Thank you.
Well,
okay, yeah. We're back. And
what?
That was Gate Beats. Not exactly house, but music.
A gate is part of a house.
By Neil Rolnick.
A former guest?
A former guest here on Calvis and Damien before it was
In the House.
And during the course of that, we, of course, did hear the famous Max Roach clip, Operetta.
For office component, we think.
Yes.
Whatever it is, yes.
Yeah, and no title to that slow.
And there are no more bits extant?
None I can find. No, only those. Hmm. And then we heard a bit of Ross Bolliter's Crow Country CD. That was Unfinished Business for Ruined Piano.
This guy's out in Australia, and there's an image on the CD cover of this piano in a field or in a barn that's falling apart.
Just...
And he plays it.
It's wonderful.
It
absolutely.
Indeed.
And a bit of Hinges by David Barnes, and also sort of intruding in the middle of the house construction section, a little bit of I Got a Chainsaw in my Pocket.
I don't think it is intruding so much as adding to the flavor.
Well, maybe your flavor got added to, but you never know.
What?
Well, there's all these things, you know, there's all these little things that you want. All right. So today our guest
is... Do we have
to
pay a royalty each time we play that?
Yes. Oh, big royalty.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm going to cut it all out and make it backwards or something.
Yes.
Our guest today is Alex Koch.
Yes, Alex to Koch.
Alex Koch, yes, to Koch. And next time we should have Alex Ukpik as our guest, so just to let you know who's coming up. Lisa Whistlecroft, we haven't recorded that one yet.
All we have to do is read her bio.
Oh,
that would take
yes.
Upwards of an hour and 20 minutes.
Yes, Brian Grindstrom coming up at some point. We don't have exact dates on that one. And a couple of other folks, Jack Vies, we missed him. He was here in New England, and we have to talk to him by the telephone. And then,
But you'll never know, because it will sound so seamless that you'll imagine
absolutely.
He is in the studio with us.
So let's turn to Alex now, who's in the studio with us,
and certainly is.
See what he has to say.
In the house.
Straight from, where are you? Are you in North Carolina now?
That's right. I'm in Durham, North Carolina.
Aha. Very good. Tell us a little bit about yourself. We've had a chance to listen to your music, and we will have lots of questions for you, but let's hear about you. How did you get involved in this composition biz?
Well, I guess I wanted to be primarily a performer for quite a while, and I guess in my search for complete artistic freedom, I realized that composing in the end, I think, gave me the most freedom. So I started out playing clarinet in the wind band, doing some klezmer with my dad, who played a little trumpet, and his accordion player friend. And then in high school, I started listening to some more different types of music, and I got into jazz a little bit. So I started off playing jazz clarinet and then moved on to tenor saxophone. And college, I joined the jazz band and some combos and stuff.
And which college, what college was this?
This was Brown University. So in 2002, I entered Brown, and I was also in the orchestra playing clarinet, so I kept that going. And by around the middle of college, I'd taken a few classes, orchestration and composition, and I think it resonated with me immediately. So I kept going with it, and about a year out of college, I decided to try to get into grad school, and now I'm at Duke University in the second year of my PhD program for composition.
We'll get back to this PhD program question.
All right.
Yeah. So you're a youngster actually compared to us. I mean, we're just falling apart here biologically, but you're like 25.
I'll be 25 in about a week.
Happy advanced birthday. We'll post the show on your birthday if we can do that.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I think we should jump right into some music and our kind of our first questions. Let's start with, let me see here. What's the one?
How can you read that?
What do you mean, how can I read? This is my handwriting. I can read this.
You should be typing. What happened to your old Underwood?
I don't take notes that way, and I don't have. I should bring out an old Newton to see if I can get it to recognize anything at all. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Let's start with context. Tell us a little bit about context and exactly how much you stole from Steve Reich and why.
Okay. Well, to be honest, I think I didn't steal anything specific from Reich, but he's always been one of my largest influences. And I think I have his music in my head a lot of the time. I've performed some of his works as well. New York Counterpoint for clarinet, for example. I guess for me, this piece actually was one of two pieces I had to write in a very short time period. And this was for the Norfolk Chamber Music Festival for the New Music Workshop segment of that. And one piece I wrote, basically entire thing was indeterminate, and it was quite atonal. And this piece was quite the opposite. It was very rhythmic, repetitive, and most of it exists in a dominant key. So it was a motive that I tried to use in a few other contexts. And it just didn't quite work. And then finally I put it into this marimba quartet, and it seemed to work a little better, and I went with it, and I wrote a fun 6-minute piece. It doesn't have a lot of programmatic elements, but it certainly does explore, you know, my love for minimalist music.
Sure. Okay. And Damien, you thought it sounded
just like the opening riff of Six Marimbas, and then the palette broadens a bit. Since I know Six Marimbas pretty well, used to study with Russell Hartenberger.
Yes.
Primary henchmen on that piece.
I'll have to listen. I actually, I haven't heard that piece, embarrassingly, but I don't know. I guess a repetitive sort of dominant type of chord thing might appear in Reich quite a bit.
Let's hear it.
Well, yeah, let's hear it. We're gonna listen to Context.
And who are the performers?
These are four performers most of them were at Yale studying with Robert Van Cise. So, let's see, it's Jihei Jung, Ayano Kataoka, Svet Stoyanov, and, James Dietz.
It's really nice when you can pick up four really top-notch performers at the flick of a baton.
Wow, they're fantastic. I hope I get the chance to work with some of them again, but who knows? It's a very good percussion program at Yale and at Peabody, where Van Cise teaches.
Context by our guest today on Calvus and Damien.
In the house,
Alex Koch. Thank you. context by Alex Koch, our guest here today. So I think some of our older listeners, isn't it nice to say older listeners?
No, it isn't. Oh, older than us, you mean?
Yeah, well, no.
Sure.
No. We'll get a sense of that, what we meant by that sounding like so much like Reich. What fascinated you in particular about the whole sort of pulsing minimalist thing? Because we noticed in several of the pieces that we're going to play today that you are strongly attached, perhaps is the word, to this. And if sure. I may ask one more question along with that, was this and were these other pieces that we're going to hear that have kind of a pulse minimalism, are they through composed or are they modular in some way?
Well, every piece I approach differently, so I can't say that one piece is that all the pieces are through composed or all are modular. I think as I get older and more mature, I do try to plan the pieces out a little better. Than I perhaps used to when I was first starting out. But I do like to compose in sections, and I often like to reverse the process. I'll write the end first quite a bit, or I'll work from the middle outwards in both directions, trying to link different sections with sort of motives that might appear in all the sections or something like that. But as far as my obsession with pulse, which, yes, you're totally right, I think because of a number of years playing jazz and really playing pretty complex rhythms, also listening to all kinds of popular music growing up, listening to hip-hop and funk and dance music in the past few years, techno and house music especially. It works for me. I really like grooves. I like to play jazz riffs, etc. So it just makes sense. And I've done some pieces that depart from that, and I've come back to pulse because I think it's what I do best, and I think it's what a lot of people want to hear, too.
The audience. Know your audience. Always important in this world.
Yeah, like we know our audience.
Yeah, right. It's very difficult.
But. Well, we're going to play two more pieces that are quite different, so they can give the flavor of who you are as a composer. And I think The Way Home is a good one to go to next, because it has a kind of a slower pulse, and it has an entirely different kind of harmonic structure from these simple ones. Let's give us an introduction, if you will, to The Way Home.
All right. This was one of my very first pieces, actually. I wrote it in 2005, and I didn't write it on the plane or anything, but it does have a strong connection with my trip back from about 5 months in Europe. Again, it was another first for me, my first time in Western Europe, really, traveling.
And where did you go?
I was studying abroad in Madrid, Spain, and then I did a lot of traveling in France and Eastern Europe and Denmark, a number of places, all of which I'd never been to before. So this piece is just about, it's about memory and how memory can sort of have a common thread, but also diverge and even manipulate itself, perhaps a little bit away from the truth. But this is a solo piano piece performed. It was premiered by Andrew Aziz, who's a really brilliant pianist and a friend of mine from Brown University.
Let's hear it. This is a piece by Alex Koch called The Way Home. The Way Home by Alex Koch, our guest here today. I can't say guest today. What's the matter with my mouth?
You're thinking of a Ford.
Gastronomical is what. I'm hungry. That's what it is. I'm always hungry. So this was a European-influenced piece, in a sense?
Yeah, I'd say at least as far as some of the programmatic elements. However, the style,
the harmonies and stuff. I mean, we were struck right away, and we said, Messiaen.
Not Darmstadt.
Oh, good. Not Darmstadt. I have heard Messiaen before. This was an early piece, and it was really an intuitive piece. Sometimes I like to compose with somewhat strict sort of intervallic regimes, but this time I just listened, and I think it came out with a pretty strong jazz influence. I listened to a lot of jazz, especially in around that time, 2004, 2005. So there wasn't any structure at all as far as the harmonies, but I did have a theme, a melodic theme that I kept going through the whole piece, and I think around that I spaced the harmony.
Did you write this at a keyboard?
I did, yes.
Is that how you usually work, or do you work conceptualizing the piece and writing it down, or do you drafts at a keyboard? Do you drafts on paper? Do you do drafts in a sequencer file? How do you work?
Well, yeah, I definitely use the keyboard, although I'm a horrible piano player. But I do like to improvise. I like to improvise on certain riffs that I have in my head, or riffs that come out even with experimenting on the keyboard itself. So I do a lot of composition just through improvisation, probably because I've improvised a lot on the saxophone through jazz. And from there, I do like to sequence it in MIDI and play it back, and I can speed it up or slow it down and change it slightly. So I do like to use the computer to write quite a bit. It's very helpful.
We're going to go to another piece, which I don't think could be much more different from the rest of the material that we have, and this is No One Mix. I'm going to play it. And then we'll come back and ask some questions about it. Here we go. Alex Koch, No One. Actually, just is it No One Mix or No One? Let's see.
This one we could call No One Mix.
No One Mix. Here we go.
What's your favorite word? Arbitrary.
Discombobulated.
Susurrus.
Goiter.
Periwinkle.
Agency.
Upholstery.
Friday.
Palindrome.
If.
My name.
Fantastic. Sound.
Charter.
Cataclysmic.
Love.
Parabola.
Cacophony.
Key.
Perennial.
Effervescent.
Cosmic.
Skugma.
Marshmallow.
Poop.
Plethora.
No.
Illuminate.
Semiotics.
Rather. Gloaming.
Crescent.
Wisteria.
I've always wanted to write on the bathroom wall.
Blick, Mist,
although
Brown.
The human population climbs less
Blick
and less steeply as the number approaches 2.1, humanity will still, in theory, eventually come to weigh as much as the Earth, and if given enough time, will exceed the mass
www.cleanelectionsri.org.
I caught this morning mine.
The essence of the acorn is the tree.
Abortion is not homicide.
Presentness.
Go crimson.
Where, oh where,
in dark places,
is Danny Bag?
A person may spread disease to anyone who pleases.
I guess I have a lot of things to ponder.
The more we are, the less we are free.
Think,
drink, stink, dink, sink.
We are animals.
I vote based on research.
I'm writing paper.
Take care.
Corn.
Demonstrating my smile.
It is the law of the universe that retaliation, hatred, ignorance, and revenge.
I'm about
only continue
95%
to cycle
sure.
And never stop it.
I just caught
reconciliation
something from the sea.
Does not mean that we surrender rights and conditions,
no gods,
but rather that we use
no
love.
Masters.
Our wisdom and compassion must walk together.
Yale diplomats,
Harvard diplomats,
agreed. Maha Gosanda.
But how do we make sure that this love confronts conflicts
be.
And discomfort?
Leggere non intelligere nel
clere.
Fandango.
Don't eat it.
How can we hook up? Monday,
use.
June 28th.
Sleepy.
Me too.
The donkey.
My mark, my life after
call
death.
The center for rape, trauma, and sexual assault.
Imperial Theta. Hellbent for Scandinavian Pleta. 2005
hours,
to 2006.
Be brave, bold right. Robot.
One, two, three.
Best bathroom graffiti ever.
If you don't like abortion,
what is your
don't
favorite
don't
have
Brown. Well, you found the place.
Liberacion.
Enjoy your stay.
Seduce him.
Coffee gets me high.
Or her.
Flush twice.
Looks Lennon like dolls. I picked the wrong way to stop yes. Anything.
It's okay.
Don't
even
have to do
being
anything.
Whence
so
did
bad.
Flow the buffalo?
I'm awkward too.
And I'm recording
nobody
now.
What did you how can you be you so judgmental?
The landlord will come and paint over
I will if you...
Machines are restless.
Cry, baby. Cry. Make your mother sigh.
You
she's
are
old enough
an enemy of God.
So cry.
KC00.
You would think at this finer institution, one could get away from such childish
this too
habits.
Shall pass. We need more writing.
Why do we let Rizdi trash on our campus?
Entropy and
embrace
tone.
The decay enhances the flavor of the article.
Favorite hidden.
I like this.
Secluded spots at Brown.
Surround yourself
love,
with people.
Love
make
is the only way.
You're good enough.
Love.
Two.
Love will tear us
sales,
apart again.
Third floor. Sunny with a great view.
Check out www.coffeeorist.org.
Why?
Four. Room above Font's Arch.
Who's got my nose candy?
Sorry, I wasn't back at school yet. Let's meet
who
Tuesday
do you love?
The 30th at 6.
420.
How strange it is to be anything at all.
Knowledge
Neutral
speaks,
Milk Hotel.
But wisdom listens.
Such wisdom has been bestowed on me.
Brown is overrated.
You are overrated.
Ural mountains
Jesus really is the good Lord.
Range.
Heart
thank
lady
you.
Jesus.
Yeah, Captain Obvious.
I'm talking to you.
Who gave permission for the walls to be written
school
on anyway?
Crap.
Grails are weird.
9/11 was an inside
I
job.
I wish I was a little bit taller.
Milo Juana.
If you sprinkle when you tinkle, please be neat
you,
and wipe
it's
no,
yours.
Your feet.
I rocks!
It never
is
was.
It true that the contents of our hearts are written on the bathroom walls?
No one will be watching us.
Why don't we do it in a row?
No one will be watching us.
No One Mix by Alex Koch, our guest here today on Calvus and Damien.
In the house.
Tell us about this piece, and then we'll yell at you.
Okay, great. this was a lot of fun for me. The idea came about when I was reading some critical theory, and I think it was senior year of college. And I was in the library just trying, pouring over this stuff and not really getting too far. And I don't know, I went to the bathroom, and I realized that there's so much graffiti on the library walls in these bathrooms in the main library at Brown. And I wanted to preserve it because it often, every semester, it would get painted over and then it would disappear. But I've always kind of been fascinated by graffiti in general and by what people will write in the seclusion of a private space when there's no one to watch them do it.
Unless there's someone in the other stall tapping with his or her shoe.
Right, and that does happen, and there are often graffiti. There's often graffiti that describes you know, the best ways to transmit what you want to say by tapping or knocking. But there's all kinds of stuff in it. I think it's a lot of fun to read and to think about. So I wrote it all down as much as I could, and I had a female friend do the same in the female bathrooms. And then I got friends who generally were actors or singers who had pretty expressive voices to record them live and to interpret them, really act them out in the studio. And then I cut it up and put it through 8 channels in an installation type space, a couple different galleries in Providence, Rhode Island. And then I had allowed the listeners and the people who came to the gallery to actually put their own graffiti on the walls themselves. So it was sort of an iterative process, generative process. The reason I made this was for a radio program a few years ago, and it doesn't have any of the expletives that are run through the entire piece.
Yeah, I was wondering about the lack of expletives. Actually, it seemed like it would be one that would invite that.
Yeah,
not at Brown. Brown's a clean school.
Well, it's Brown.
Right, yeah.
It's it's not clean.
Right.
It's skip mark
yeah,
school.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is, and there's a lot of there's a lot of vulgarity in the mix, which I think is also quite interesting. For this other program, I wasn't supposed to put any of that in. So that's how it is. It's a clean version. Just try to imagine it with a lot more expletives.
I think our reaction to this was it felt really, I don't know, juvenile. And not only that, but also it's, you know, maybe it had a too heavy dose of irony, but and then it had technical issues. I mean, I think we were a little bit disturbed by, like, for example, the mic plosives, which, you know, those kinds of things that then in a final mix should be gone, and wondered,
unless it was intentional.
Was it? Do you think it was intentional?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, those are some reactions that we had, and maybe you could just jump off of those.
Yeah, oh, it was not a technical masterpiece whatsoever. It was one of the first times I'd ever done recording. And I guess this is a secondary version. I mean, the real version is meant to be in a gallery and installation where there's ambient sound coming from the gallery space itself and the surrounding area. It sounds completely different through 8 channels. You don't pick up any of the mic pops and all that other stuff from the awful recording that I did. So no, this is not something I think that I would want to release on a CD if I ever get that far. But it was really meant to be just a stereo rendition of the installation to give anyone who wants to hear a vague idea of what it was doing. And it's, I guess, more about the content from these walls, the transformation from sort of the visual, the textural into the auditory mm-hmm. that I want to transmit. And I hope it does that to some extent.
But did you think of maybe having a live performance of it?
That could be really interesting. I never thought about actually doing it with live voices. I have thought about maybe making a 5.1 version for some kind of concert with a good speaker system. But I think either one could be interesting. And really what I'd like to do now, I mean, this was over 2 years ago. I'd like to do it again, maybe here in Durham, maybe in New York City, record some new graffiti, get some new recordings and maybe do it a little more professionally too. But it's a transferable idea. It can happen anywhere in the world, you know, mm-hmm. as long as there's people mm-hmm. writing on the walls.
Sure. Maybe interactive, maybe the kind of thing where the entire body of quotes are individual files which are popped up depending on the behavior of the listeners in the gallery space, something like that.
Sure. That would be definitely a nice step forward as well for another installation. Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. So something like pressure sensors, perhaps people touch certain graffiti that's on the wall and it triggers a sample even. There's a lot of ways to go with this. I hope I get the chance to do it again.
Fantastic. We have another a piece coming up, and our reaction to this was interesting because we think that this was a deliberate sort of headbreaker for the listener. I think that you intended it to be that, and that's this piece played by the Zelic Ensemble, Reduce, Reuse, and Recycle. Seemed to be an awful lot of reuse and recycle going on. Was that the point?
Yeah, sure. And actually, the title's a little misleading. There is certainly reusing and recycling within the piece, but actually, this is similar to context in that I had a motive that I just tried to work into a number of instrumental settings, and it just wasn't working for me. And finally, I came across this this instrumentation, and it did work. So in a way, I was reusing and recycling my own work from the past, but I think it goes both ways, within the piece and sort of outside of it.
Yeah, I heard some Stravinsky in that piece, in one of the bass riffs. Did you think about that? Maybe the one of the dances in Le Sacre and also in, I think,
Symphony of Songs.
Symphony of Songs, right.
That kind of boom, 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 dun, dun, dun. It sounded like it was the timpani bit straight out of Le Sacre.
Okay, wow. Well, that's really nice to hear. I mean, I listen to a lot of Stravinsky. It could be. I tend to be drawn towards his neoclassical phase probably the most. And I definitely listen to a lot of that music in the last, you know, 3-4 years. So perhaps maybe it sounds somewhat like that as well. I mean, it's in that dominant key a lot of the time that often appears in that phase of his composition. So I don't know.
Okay, are we planning to hear this?
Yeah, let's hear it.
As soon as we get our technological...
I was just sort of listening and fading away there. Let's let our listeners decide how much of their heads are going to get broken by what's reused, recycled here by Alex Koch.
Thank you.